Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. This Thursday through Sunday, the Richard B. Fisher Center at Bard College in Annandale-on-Hudson presents Masterclass, an hour-long parody about playwriting, power, pomposity, and people from Dublin-based theater troupe Broken Talkers and feminist choreographer and performance artist Adrian Truscott. Adrian is one half of the cabaret duo The Vow Vow Sisters, who mix performance modes from circus to main stage and with some regularity perform in the Buff. She will serve as MC of the Spiegel Tent at Bard this summer for the second consecutive season. When Masterclass premiered at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, it won the Fringe First Award. They put it up at NYU's Skirball Center last weekend, and it will be at the Luma Theater in the Fisher Center at Bard tomorrow through Sunday. Adrian Truscott joins us now. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Sarah.
It is very exciting that Masterclass is coming to Bard. Very exciting that it was at the Skirball Center last weekend. Where did the idea begin and what does the performance on stage look like?
The piece kind of came out of a moment where I was seeing in the press, in the arts press, that several playwrights that I would say were pretty big figures in the like 90s, theater, playwriting, production that I kind of grew up supposedly inheriting that this is what theater looks like.
Right.
I saw these largely guys, white kind of cis guys, God help us, like really like retracting from the world, like not allowing cast changes, not allowing Q&As after their work. And I felt it was all in the guise of like, let the work speak for itself. And it just seemed quite ironic to me that like people with the most access to presenting their work, which is like, you know, there's never enough room for all of us, contracting that access by choice, because they seemed to me, if not afraid, at least wary of how their work might play out in a changing world, which is also fascinating given that theater is an ephemeral form. So it's sort of, if written well, should be able to morph and change as our world and access to the world changes. So it kind of behaves like a straightforward play at first, as if I were trying to write one of those kind of Mamedian or Labute types of plays, muscular mm-hmm. writing, economy of language. And so my collaborators, the Broken Talkers, and I just like dove into all of that stuff to make a play that might start to look and sound like it, but is also a parody and an experiment.
And a takedown?
Well, maybe, Sarah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Please don't. How did you encounter the Broken Talkers and decide to work with them?
You'll hear a little bit about this if you come see the show. We met, we were both doing shows at the Sydney Festival in Australia, and we saw one another's work. And, you know, when you're overseas for these festivals, you kind of find your temporary chosen family quickly. And we just kind of, you know, got along, hit it off, liked each other's work, had fun traipsing around the festival and beyond together. And I have to credit them with being very tenacious and generous about staying in touch with me and trying to bring me into their sphere. And we did a couple residencies with some things. And then they just said, like, you know, is there an idea you would really like to do with us? And I really welcomed the invitation, the funding, and what their work would bring to the work I do and how it might meet up. And in particular, because they are, you know, white Irish straight guys who, when they showed their own interest in theater, were directed to these types of writers, both American, Irish, and beyond. And, you know, embraced them as good theater unquestioningly at the time. So we decided to revisit that, and that this piece would be all the stronger and funnier and more prickly for having them in it, you know, confronting that they, you know, even the offensiveness that they were told, this is what theater is, try and do this, you know, which they do something far more interesting.
I have seen the trailer and some small snippets of video, and the costumes are fun and funny. and specifically maybe sort of 70s kind of feeling.
Yep.
How did you work with Sarah Foley, that's the costume designer, to land on the look of the piece?
We worked with a lot of found text in a way that became like, oh, we don't have to write this. Like the parody documentary version of what they've already said about themselves is going to be more fun. So looking at a lot of different interviews, I play this kind of Hemingway-esque version of myself or an artist who I feel like we're trying to bridge that particular kind of writer that really wants to match the, you know, indoor, quiet, solitary act of writing with like the conquering outdoorsman, just to make sure the writing didn't seem too fey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going on like real descriptions of real playwrights, as well as some of our own fun and padding me out and making me look ridiculous enough to feel like I could inhabit this parody. And for Phelan's costume, I think we a little bit more like stretched between 70s like film auteur era and 90s and, you know, the kind of well-known liberal arts forward interviewer we might have seen at a round table over many, many years, who we don't see so much of anymore.
There's so much subtext that we're kind of, you know, passing back and forth in this conversation.
Yeah.
I think of general ideas that we both understand and it seems agree with. Is there subtext in the play or is it text? Is the message on stage? I mean, it's parody, so it has to be, you know, clever and funny, but is the statement of the piece stated or is it for people to interpret?
I think it is for people to interpret, but also along the guidelines of the kind of foundational tenets of playwriting in the 90s, some of which are luxuries I think male identified artists are afforded more easily than female identified, which is to say, hey, there's no meaning in it. I just tried to write a play. I'm just interested in moving the action forward. And whereas I feel like because I'm in it and saying some things, it can quickly be assumed that that is exactly what I think, but maybe it's not. You know, we tried to write it so that it is not didactic in that way and more like, you know, I think we've experienced audiences being like, right on, Adrian Truscott. And then I say something later and they're like, say what? You don't honestly think that. And who knows, you know, it is a play that happens to be performed by two people who share the same names as the actual artists you see on stage. And that may or may not mean that these are the things we feel all the time. That said, it's a parody about some of our greats. So yeah, we're having some fun at their expense.
They can take it. How did you decide to have you and Phelan both keep your names and as your characters in the piece?
There is material based on what exists in the world about these artists. And then we tried to do, you know, the harder thing, which is turn the same questions on ourselves and our own practices and our own access and privilege, which I know in these days people are worried that sounds like, oh God, access and privilege. But like, it gets real prickly and real funny. Like, so Phelan and I, with Gary guiding us, like did a lot of improv with one another in very, very real ways where we take each other to task actually about what we do in our practices and what we do, what we put on stage and the kind of access they have and the kind of access I have and the kind of access that people that don't look anything like either of us have. So I think that keeping our actual names keeps it true and uncomfortable, as well as leaves a little room to demand that the audience not assume that everything I'm saying is autobiographically true.
Masterclass will be performed at Bard on April 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th. So this coming weekend, Thursday through Sunday. And as I mentioned, you were in New York City last weekend. How did it go?
Thank you for that, because it was so fun to do this in New York, because as international as some of these you know, questions and thoughts that we play around with are, so many of the references are so deeply of the gritty New York City 90s playwriting. And so we've performed at so many places that aren't New York City that I kind of forgot how specific and hilarious some of the references are until Friday night when the audience was like howling. And it was really fun. The play starts with Phelan alone on stage. So I get to like get a feel for like, okay, what kind of audience are we working with here? Are they like super sharp? And it was just like, oh my God, we're going to have a ball. It's a tight hour and it's very surprising and very goofy, which is another thing I like about working with these guys. They're like incredibly disciplined, more disciplined than I am, writers and makers. But we all feel like really committed to making super accessible theater without sacrificing sophistication. And so it's a really fun show. It doesn't drag, you know. And now, you know, now I've moved up here after performing up here for years and years and years. But now I'm in the Hudson Valley and at Bard College. So like there's a whole different community to introduce this work to. So I'm like, a, you know, kid in a candy store this week.
Fantastic. You do work at Bard and you coordinate an MA program in human rights and the arts. Mm-hmm. Can you expand on what that is like and why you felt it was important to develop that program with Bard?
To be clear, I am in a administrative role. Like, you know, the people, the founders of the program are a mixture of academics and scholars and arts industry and an artist, Tanya El-Houri. And I think it's, you know, it's one of the like few graduate programs that really want to look at this intersection between human rights as they're understood internationally and in legal parameters, and then increasingly how activist practices and artistic practices can, should, shouldn't intersect and affect how we think about human rights. And, you know, I think so many people who are tuned in at all, whether you're, you know, putting out what you would proactively call political art or not, all art is political. And I have to understand the politics of what my body on stage is versus, you know, a differently bodied person. And so, so you know, it looks at all those things very broadly. And it feels really fun after, you know, to be working with like young emerging artists who are really committed to activism and looking at human rights all over the world, not just here. And, you know, I think my work can tend to be quite Western America oriented. So it's really challenging and fun to have that popped open a bit by so many influences from outside of America.
You also MC the events at the Spiegel Tent in the summer at Bard. And last year was the first year you did that, and this will be your second year?
Yes.
What do you like about that gig?
Well, that Spiegel Tent is what introduced me to this area as the Vow Vow Sisters, many years ago. And I think, you know, we did the inaugural season, and I think the next eight. We'd performed in Spiegel Tents all over the world, and they were still kind of new to this country. So it feels very full circle to have come to this area via that tent and, you know, exploded and caused chaos and fun in that way. And then, you know, cobbled together a little piece of property up here where we're trying to build. And my partner, Carmine Cavelli, has also played at the Spiegel Tent with Julie Ruin and with Bridget Everett. So, you know, so now we've become part of the community in a different way. And then, you know, we're of the community now. And then, of course, Bard deepens that too. And then emceeing is really fun because it's really not about you, right? You're like, it's not about your own material. You're just supposed to make an audience feel like welcome and honored that they decided to come out and get away from those screens. And then make the art, you know, get the audience ready to like gobble up the amazing artists they're about to see. So it's like a quick in and out with some stupid costume and, you know, a couple of one-liners and I'm out. So I love doing it last summer. I also think it's incredible that I get to live in this beautiful, beautiful rural area and still like disco dance till midnight in the summer, you know, like,
yeah.
It's so great. So I'm very happy they asked me back this summer. I can't wait.
The Broken Talkers and Adrian Truscott's masterclass will be at the Luma Theater at the Richard B. Fisher Center for the Performing Arts at Bard College in Annandale-on-Hudson, April 3rd through the 6th. It has been a delight to speak with you. I hope we get to do it again sometime. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Masterclass by The Broken Talkers and our guest, Adrian Truscott, will run April 3rd through the 6th in the Luma Theater of the Richard B. Fisher Center for the Performing Arts at Bard College in Annandale-on-Hudson, New York. To learn more, visit fishercenter.bard.edu. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable.